Now we're going to hear from Danielle Spirandelli, who's a graduate student in the Urban Design and Planning Program. And she's doing a research on at the Urban Ecology Research Lab. What she really cares about is the effects of urbanization and how it affects both human and ecological health and what specifically to do about it. So I look forward to hearing your talk.
Thank you. So good afternoon. Thank you for the introduction. So I'm going to be presenting this afternoon on very early stages of my dissertation research, and which is on the relationship between land use, land cover, and wastewater infrastructure and their impacts on shellfish growing areas in the Puget Sound. So my research examines the interactions between land use, land cover, and wastewater infrastructure across a gradient of urbanization. Specifically, my questions are, what is this relationship between land use, land cover, and wastewater infrastructure and biological conditions for shellfish? And how does this relationship vary across a gradient of urbanization? In this slide, you can see an orthophoto. This is along the Kitsap Peninsula. And we have some areas of forest here and residential development, certain patterns with roads. And we have a shellfish, commercial shellfish growing area right here. And then these are recreational shellfish growing areas. Here's some recreational shellfish users having fun picking up shellfish. And what we don't see in this photograph is what's going on underground in terms of how wastes are being processed. And Kitsap is serviced both by a central wastewater treatment plant as well as septic tanks. So what is this relationship between shellfish and urbanization? So we can think of it in terms of a stylized plot which represents a possible relationship between biological conditions as a linear relationship. So as we urbanize, conditions for shellfish decrease in a linear fashion. However, in research from a few years ago by Alberti and Bidwell, they found in their study that actually landscape change in basins across the Puget Sound, that this relationship was not linear. The only limitation in their study was that they didn't include wastewater treatment. So they didn't know what was going on in terms of landscape change as well as wastewater treatment. So if we were to incorporate wastewater systems, perhaps this relationship is more complex. So my hypothesis is that wastewater infrastructure mediates the effects of landscape change in urbanizing watersheds up to a certain threshold. Then conditions for shellfish drop dramatically as the impacts of landscape change on the basin's ecosystem functions are too great to support shellfish growing areas. So why study shellfish? Well, some people argue that shellfish are a keystone species for urbanizing estuaries by providing provisional, supporting, as well as cultural services. They provide three-dimensional habitat for marine and plant animals. They are particularly important in the uptake and recycling of nutrients and energy. They filter seawater at rates ranging between 6 and 26 gallons a day, depending on their size, species, and other factors. And in doing so, they process bacteria, viruses, as well as chemical contaminants. There's also a very important source of income. In Washington State, we're the largest producer of shellfish in the nation. And in 2000, nearly $77 million was generated from shellfish. Recreational shellfish harvesting is also productive enough to support some coastal communities of Washington. So overall, as such, shellfish can be thought of as really important indicators of water quality and human health in urbanizing estuaries. So this map shows the extensive coverage of both commercial and recreational shellfish in the Puget Sound. These green areas show the approved commercial shellfish areas by the Department of Health. The purple areas are recreational shellfish areas. You can also see patterns of urbanization represented by impervious surfaces. We see high clusters of aggregated impervious surfaces from Seattle down to Tacoma, the Kitsap area, and down here in Thurston and up north. Here's just a graph showing the trends of shellfish closures from 1981 to 2005. And there was quite a rapid loss of shellfish growing areas from 1981 to the mid-90s. And then it sort of leveled off. And yet still in 2005, nearly a third of all commercial areas were closed. So what the concern is that population growth is certainly a leading driver of change in this area. And we're expecting many new residents in the area, up to 1.4 million by 2025. And many of these residents will be settling along the shores of the Puget Sound as attractive areas to live. However, the future patterns of development and how we choose to settle in these areas remains uncertain, and the implications for shellfish are both critical and unknown. I just want to briefly go over the Washington State water quality standards. These are set by the Department of Ecology, and there are certain parameters that protect aquatic life and shellfish harvesting, as well as human health. Fecal coliform is the indicator organism that is used to monitor shellfish harvesting areas, and they are closed when the geometric mean is above 14 organisms per 100 milliliters, or 10% of all samples that are obtained for calculating a geometric mean are above 43 organisms for 100 milliliters of water. So shellfish are managed by quite a few actors in the Puget Sound. And the main actors are the Department of Health, Washington Department of Health, the U.S. Corps of Army of Engineers, the Washington Fish and Wildlife Commission, and the Northwest Indian Fisheries Commission. They set harvesting rules, standards for shellfish growing areas. There are also other important actors like local health departments, the Puget Sound Restoration Fund, other nonprofit organizations, environmental organizations, Puget Sound Partnership, and Department of Ecology that monitor fecal pollution, as well as are involved with restoration projects. So my point here is that this is great. There's so many actors that are involved that are concerned about shellfish. But I would argue that they work in a piecemeal fashion, and that they tend to work in localized areas. And so if we're thinking about our entire region urbanizing over the next 20, 40, 50 years, what are our strategies in the long term for where shellfish, what is the viable future for shellfish in our region long term? So what are the impacts of urbanization on shellfish? There's been the general research shows that there's a general downward trend as we urbanize for shellfish. However, the details in the research show some contradictory results. Duda and Cromarty, Lip and others, Kelsey and others, all of them showed that it was the density of septic systems that were the primary predictors for fecal water pollution. However, Young and Thaxton showed that it was sewered basins versus unsewered basins with leaching septic systems that was the leading cause. Meanwhile, White and others and Hatton and others, they focused on drainage infrastructure, ditching and channeling. And actually in this study by Hatt and others in Australia, they examined the proportion of impervious surfaces that were connected to drainage pipes and found that that, along with density of septics, was the most important predictor for fecal pollution. Mollin and others used proportional measures of urbanization, such as the total population and percent of urban land, as well as a percent of impervious surfaces. And Alberti and Bidwell, in their research, they examined basins across the entire Puget Sound. And in addition to total forest cover, they found that forest fragmentation as a configuration metric and road density as a connectivity metric were the most important predictors for fecal pollution, for water quality. When they examined the aggregation of impervious surfaces, they found that that was an important variable for understanding the relationship between urbanization and water quality, and that they found that this relationship was not linear. Ensign and Mallon, in their pre- and post-forest plot experimentations, found that fecal pollution declined after regrowth of forest plots. So I just want to show my conceptual model that I'm using for understanding how waste is being processed in a coupled human natural system in an urbanizing region. And in this model, I'm connecting urbanization and patterns of urbanization to human health as fecal coliform, as it affects shellfish and recreational contact with water. And both human socioeconomic and biophysical drivers influence how we developed in this region and how we how these patterns evolve in terms of land use, land cover patterns, drainage patterns, as well as rainfall patterns. And these influence are the processing, the nutrient processing and bacterial processing in coastal basins. As basins develop and the assimilative capacity of soils to process nutrients becomes too great, then we make choices for wastewater infrastructure. And so this creates a feedback and might spur new patterns of development. And together, these impact the health of human health and the water quality in coastal areas. So just to remind you what my research questions are, what is the relationship between land use, land cover, and wastewater infrastructure and the biological conditions for shellfish growing areas? Specifically, I'm interested in what landscape pattern metrics best predict water quality in nearshore environments for shellfish growing areas. And how do these landscape metrics interact with wastewater infrastructure and at what scale to impact shellfish? And secondly, how do these landscape pattern variables vary across a gradient of urbanization? My research design is a cross-sectional analysis, as well as a longitudinal analysis of landscape patterns. I'll be exploring relationships between landscape patterns, wastewater infrastructure, and fecal coliform, and analyze these patterns at two different scales, so both a sub-basin watershed scale as well as a local nearshore scale, and use multi-regression to assess these relationships. Very quickly, some of the response variables, geometric mean of fecal coliform, as well as variance of fecal coliform content, number of violations of the water quality standards, and my predictor variables, landscape composition metrics, so percent impervious surfaces, percent forest, grass, urban cover within a basin, and landscape configuration metrics, so the aggregation of impervious surfaces, fragmentation of forests. And I want to examine the volume, amount of septic systems within basins, whether they're on a separated sewer system, combined sewer, road, and then my connectivity metrics will examine road density and drainage connection. Very quickly, I'm using a gradient analysis to select basins across an urban gradient. I combined population density, slopes, and distance to urban centers and ports as my way of defining what a gradient of urbanization is. I use principal components analysis to combine these. The results is a continuous map from negative 3 to plus 9. The darker areas is the most more urban areas, moving out to more suburban, rural, and ex-urban areas. I'm constrained by the data that I have, which is I'll be using 2007 land cover map and Department of Health water quality points. These are in certain areas, in the Hood Canal, South Puget Sound, a lot up north, but there's a large swath here of an urban corridor that's missing. So I'll be using Department of Ecology and local health department data to examine that variation as well. I just want to quickly give an example of three clusters of basins in that along this urban gradient. We've got Dyes Inlet that's more urban, Henderson Inlet that's more suburban, and Oakland Bay that may be more rural basins. This is just some very preliminary sort of descriptive data of the land cover within those basins. In Dyes Inlet, we've got more urban cover as these dark bars here. There's one basin that has more forest cover. Overlaid is geometric means of fecal coliform. The orange is the dry season. I'll be examining data according to seasonal. So the summer, fall, dry season, and then the wet season. This is Henderson's Inlet. Again, sort of more suburban, one basin with more urban, but the other two basins with less urban, more forest. Can kind of see sort of a declining trend in that data, but none of this, I wouldn't say, is necessarily significant. It's just really just looking at some descriptive statistics. And Oakland Bay, more forested. We have this interesting spike that came up with the fecal coliform data from the dry months. And I'm guessing it has to do with the fact that Oakland Bay is an enclosed estuary and has a high degree of reflushing. And there's a wastewater treatment plant right here, and that it's possible that there was an overflow event and fecal matter got sort of stuck in that basin. So finally, just to finish off, some potential management implications of my research, that it may be important to consider the landscape patterns and the configuration of landscape and how we're changing the landscape or interacting with wastewater infrastructure to control fecal pollution. May be important to consider whole basin attributes of the landscape, and as well as factors at the local scale, so near shore. I hope that my explanatory model might be able to help improve predictive models of pollution loads, and that to improve design guidelines, best management practices, to improve water quality, and prioritize pollution cleanup efforts, as well as potential permits that may be for future wastewater choices. But I think more importantly in all of this is also for people to think on the whole, as we're urbanizing in the future across this region, what kind of trade-offs are we going to be making when we are developing, and the kind of choices that we make when we're developing our management plans, and how that might force us to choose certain wastewater decisions and what those implications are for the near shore and water quality of the near shore. So again, this is preliminary. I'm in the early stages of my dissertation research, so I welcome any comments and questions. And I'd like to thank NOAA and my advisor, Marina Alberti, for their support. Thank you. Any questions? All clear? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if there's a way. I'm thinking about Kitsap County, and I'm actually from Jefferson County Public Health, and I'm thinking about Kitsap County has had a lot of success reopening and recertifying its approved shellfish beds through essentially what amounts to infrastructure maintenance of septic systems. And I'm wondering is if there's a way in your study to look at either the age of the infrastructure, meaning the age of the septics that you're dealing with, because as these things age, they tend to fail, and a failing septic system, of course, produces a lot more pollution than a functioning one. And then I don't know if it would be possible to look at the vigorousness, I guess, of each, because you mentioned sort of the fragmented regulatory structure over water quality in Puget Sound. There's a way to look at jurisdictions, putting out a level of focus on things like fixing septic systems.
Those are really good questions. To answer the first one, So the first question was, could I incorporate the age of septics because they tend to fail after a certain sort of life cycle, and could I incorporate that into my model? And the second question was to examine the institutional structure that might be happening in different places and how that might affect how shellfish are doing. To answer the first question, yes, I think I could incorporate, I think that's a really good suggestion, because I think there would be a way to incorporate the age of septics by examining the age of the homes, which might be in the parcel or tax assessor's data. So I think that would be a really interesting variable to include. The second thing is I'm interested in seeing what kind of thresholds come up across space, across the Puget Sound. And in those, I plan to actually do case studies based on those thresholds. And one of my preliminary hypotheses as I'm thinking about that is it may have to do with institutions and that what's happening at the institutional level and how they're organizing around, how they're responding to what's happening in the environment. But that's very, that's in the next stage. Thank you. Yes?
Well, I'm wondering also if you could incorporate soil maps as well.
I think that would be a good control variable, and I plan to use temperature and salinity in the marine environment, tidal flushing as a control variable, but soils would be probably a good control variable as well. Yeah. Yes?
I was curious if you're trying to isolate other sources of fecal coliform, such as pet waste, which may be directly tied to urbanization, or agricultural, which may be inversely tied to urbanization.
Right. I'm actually deliberately going to exclude agriculture and focus just on urban in terms of the impervious surfaces as conduits of waste, such as animal pet waste. And agriculture, I think, is another kind of, it would become too big. And I'm trying to focus on urban and urbanization right now. Okay. I welcome your questions afterwards.